Welcome to Growing Indoors, a new limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of FOES. Protected from surges, dust, debris, mites, spores, and water, the A3i by FOES is an unstoppable powerhouse of a grow light, capable of unrivaled output of high-intensity full-spectrum light. Industry-leading lenses focus more light to hit more of your canopy, while spectral customization provides light for all stages of growth. Passive heat management and power ramping features give the A3i grow light efficiency figures that remain unmatched, and diodes that always operate at peak efficiency. Every company boasts about being the best, but FOES proves it. Visit FOES.com, that's FOHSE.com, to request your free custom lighting plan and schedule a facility tour today. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We are very pleased to introduce this new 10-episode project where we will be focused on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. My first guest is Rino Ferraris, Executive Vice President of the Northern Region for Verano. He is the co-founder of CT Pharma, a biotech company with clinical stage and discovery assets derived from cannabis. In 2019, CT Pharma announced its FDA-approved IND trial in collaboration with Yale School of Medicine. The company specializes in pharmaceutically elegant formulations, including a line of tablets featuring nanotechnology for instant and extended-release products. Rino has experience working in FDA-regulated industries, including pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, and medical devices, and Rino was formerly the president of CT Pharma, shepherding that company to the acquisition deal with Verano in November 2021. What we talked about in this interview goes back even further than that, though, to the February 2020 purchase of CT Pharma's 216,000-square-foot facility in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. What sort of decisions led the company to find and pursue this building? What needed to happen to transform it from the former site of McKesson Pharmaceutical into a large-scale indoor cannabis cultivation facility? How did Rino and his team plan ahead in an industry as uncertain as U.S. cannabis? And what would he do differently if he could rewind the tape? We address those questions, which I think serve as a helpful starting point for this series. Indoor cultivation, indoor facility design, these are complex topics, and there are specific areas of interest which we'll get into as Growing Indoors continues over the next 10 weeks. Along the way, get in touch on Instagram or LinkedIn through Cannabis Business Times social media accounts. Give us a shout out. Let us know what you want to hear about Growing Indoors over these next 10 weeks. Give FOES a shout out too. We thank them for their support for this podcast series. We, of course, are here to serve the market. That's you. Please enjoy my conversation with Rino Ferraris. Thank you, Rino, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to speak with you about CT Pharma and to dig into some of these indoor facility considerations that will be guiding our series over the next 10 weeks. I think it's great to get a chance to start these conversations with you. I know that you and the company have been featured a lot in the pages of Cannabis Business Times, and we're pretty excited to bring this out into the podcast world with this series. To begin, I wanted to maybe just rewind a little bit, maybe back to early 2020, thereabouts. If you could set the stage for the early planning and certainly the purchase of the facility in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. I know that's kind of a big, broad question, and I know the pandemic is looming in the background of that question. But if you could sort of set the stage for early 2020 and what some of the goals for CT Pharma were when you set down this new facility path.
Okay. First, Eric, I want to say thank you to you and the Cannabis Business Times staff. It's a pleasure to work with you all these years. It's a great organization, and every year it just keeps getting better and better, and it's an honor to be here today with you. So thank you for having me. So here we are. It's 2020. Actually, you need to go back to 2018, because that's really when we started looking for sites for our new building. We at the time we were operating in a 17,000 square foot facility that we had occupied since roughly 2013, 2014, and we'd really outgrown the space. That was our first location that we ever operated in, and we were ready. The time was pressing that we needed to be in a bigger facility. So we started looking around in the various surrounding towns. We had great location in the center of the state, which is something that I would recommend anybody who's contemplating moving their existing business or starting a new one. You want to be close to your customers. You know, we were in the wholesale cannabis space, so we needed to be able to deliver to our customer base, and being in the center of the state for us was very important. It was also important because at that time we had roughly 30 employees who'd been with us several years, and we didn't, you know, if all things were equal and we could move nearby, we'd prefer to do that than to relocate and force those employees to have to travel further to get to work. We certainly didn't want to lose any of our staff. It was very important to keep them. So what were the things that we contemplated for a location? You know, we were looking around, you know, of course we needed a building that would be big enough to house our operation. You know, at that time, like I said, we were in 17,000 square feet of space. So for us, we needed to be in at least 100,000 square feet of building space or greater. So we looked around in the surrounding towns. A lot of towns, you know, will accept the use. You know, they're approved to house a marijuana-related business. A lot of times you might have to go into a town and convince the town planning and zoning officials to allow the use. But that's the first step. Will the town allow the use? And then you need to get a list of sort of the requirements from the town. Are there any limitations where your building needs to be located? So for example, does it need to be in a business zone or an industrial zone? And then within those business or industrial zones, are there limitations? Are there sort of disqualifying entities that could be nearby? For example, like a school or a church. If you're, you know, in our program, within 1,500 feet of a school, the use was prohibited. So we had to stay away from schools and churches. And then the challenge. The challenge was finding the perfect building that was the right size, that had adequate parking, that was within our budget. You know, parking is a big thing. You can never overlook parking. It's easy to forget about. But it's key. Great building, great parking, in a great location that will have us. And that's sort of how it all began for us.
Absolutely. I know there's a lot of variables there in the beginning. And on some level, you can, you know, plan until you're blue in the face. But it really does come down to numbers, too, on some level. I know you're mentioning whether it's something like parking spots or employees or square footage. I mean, it really does come down to just pure measurement. Another big one, of course, is money and just the investment or even the early capital raises. So when it comes to that sort of gut check and maybe keeping budgets in mind here, what should operators really be asking themselves? I know you mentioned 17,000 square feet and wanting 100,000 or greater. How should operators maybe talk to themselves about that honest gut check?
Yeah, it's easy to sort of get lost in the fantasy that, you know, if I build it, they will come. So if I produce 100,000 pounds of flour, I can sell 100,000 pounds of flour. At the end of the day, actually at the beginning of the day, it's a business. And you need to make sure that there are customers who want and need the product and will be willing to purchase it on their terms. So with that being said, you know, would you contemplate maybe a craft size grow, something under 4,000 square feet, or maybe a 10 to 50,000, a mid-size grow, or maybe something larger, 100,000 square feet? If you were to build a 100,000 square foot building, you're going to have to run some analysis with respect to ratios. And 100,000 square feet, I can say that you can probably estimate 50 to 60% of that space can be dedicated to cultivation. The remainder of that space will go to your storage, your packaging, your dry rooms, your cure rooms, your laboratories. Do you need specialized extraction equipment? All of that, you'd be surprised how fast 100,000 square feet gets used up when you contemplate the amount of support space you'll need for your given grow. And then within the grow, even if it's 50,000 square feet of grow, it's not all flower. There's a magic ratio there too. It's, let's say And it, every grow is different. Are you using LEDs? Are you on tables? Are you on racks, et cetera? But let's just say that if you have 50,000 square feet of grow, you might end up with 35,000 square feet of flower. And if it's 35,000 square feet of flower, let's pretend that you're getting 15,000 pounds of flower produced annually. How much space do you need to package that 15,000, clean it, and distribute it? And then sort of you work your way out that way. You need to make sure that there is a demand, there's a need for your product on the market, and then decide the facility size from there. And also, you need to then evaluate your capital sources. And can you finance the build? Are you going to have to go to private equity? You know, unlikely you're going to get a bank to loan you the money. There are some recently, you can work with the various utilities. If you're willing to use LED, a lot of times the power companies will offer to subsidize some of the cost of the LED lights and maybe even some of the labor costs to install those lights. I know certainly with the HVAC equipment, there are more and more vendors willing to finance the HVAC equipment and even a portion of the installation. And then, of course, if you're borrowing those sums of money, you're going to need to inevitably invest in professional services. You will need an accountant because you'll want to file your taxes, and you want to make sure that you do all your accounting using generally accepted sort of practices, so GAAP or you don't want to borrow a few million dollars and then sort of realize that your budgets and your traceability is not intact. It's very important. Your investors are going to want to know where their money is at any given time. You want to make sure that you allocate those expenses appropriately as either capital expenditures or it can get pretty complicated. So definitely engage professional services, including legal representation. You'll want to, of course, at least a lawyer to help you establish your business documents, your organizational documents. And once you have the accounting and the legal covered, then you maybe want to have a talk with a general contractor who will then engage architects and engineers and sort of start guiding you to how to start construction on your new facility.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, maybe zooming into that facility as it's being planned and constructed, certainly an engineering firm is a great place to start here, because one thing I wanted to ask was about floor plans, or another way of putting it might be human traffic. And sometimes I feel like this is a little hard to talk about. It would certainly, it's always helpful to walk through an existing facility. You know, I'm sitting in a publishing company's office right now, and we have our office laid out in a certain way for certain publishing reasons. But it's sometimes hard to convey in words. So I'm curious, just in terms of designing the literal human traffic or the floor plan, what are some ways that you might suggest thinking about that?
Yep. And that the workflow design is crucial. Just imagine in your kitchen, you know, the sink is near the stove, is near the refrigerator. Imagine if the sink were out on the front porch and the refrigerator was down in the basement and the stove is on the back porch. It'd be difficult to cook dinner. You could do it, but it just wouldn't be probably take a lot more time than it would if you had all of those pieces of equipment located closely to each other. So it's the same thing in manufacturing. And believe it or not, there's actually been great attention paid to studying how to be efficient in layouts of manufacturing spaces. Famous mathematicians, Deming, Edward Deming was one, Durand was another. They actually created concepts that led into what they call lean manufacturing or Six Sigma methodologies. And basically, those practices are just efficient ways using mathematics to evaluate a production space to make it as efficient as possible and minimize waste. And human beings walking around is a form of waste. You know, for example, one of the things, a little simple one, our growers, we want them growing plants all day long. They're the best at growing plants, and we don't want them walking around the facility looking for a pen or, you know, what happened to my, you know, my gloves. I just put them down. I need my gloves. So we make sure that gloves are nearby, pens are nearby. We want them focusing on growing. We don't want them walking around. So same idea with laying out the facility. You should put your prop rooms next to your veg rooms next to your flower rooms next to the harvest rooms, harvest next to dry, dry next to cure next to pack, and so on. A simple way that I do it, it's very efficient. I'll take an actual blueprint and I'll start with little shapes. I'll cut shapes out and on paper. I know I want a 1,000 square foot flower room. And I know I want 10 of them. Well, if I have 10 1,000 square foot flower rooms, I'm going to need 3 1,000 square foot bedrooms. And then I'll need 2 1,000 square foot prop rooms. So I'll cut them out on paper, lay them out on my blueprint, and then move them around and really come up with the optimal configuration to design the facility to assure that we have efficient workflows, we'll call them. And it's the same thing within the laboratory, and you can drill down within the cultivation department. You know, you want to have your potting next to where you store your soil. You want your salt storage next to where your feeding systems are, et cetera. Let's see, did I answer all your questions on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reminded of one thing. I think you mentioned at a cannabis conference event at some point in the recent past, that some of this is also just, I guess, bracketed by like safety regulations. For instance, emergency egress in a grow room prohibits you from putting a plant there, and you need a little walking space, which I don't know if you want to comment on that, but I had a couple security related questions teed up as well. But, you know, it seems like the last thing you'd want to do is forget about an emergency exit door until the plants are in, you know.
Eric, you got that right. And the building inspector will make sure you won't forget about it either. Because the building inspector will come and visit the site on a weekly basis if they're a good building inspector like ours was here. And they'll make sure that you have safe egress pathways. You never want to store or you don't want to put a skid of soil in front of the emergency exit out of the back of the facility in case there's ever a need for it. So that's just common sense. But it's also... You know, I thought you were going to remind me, we were talking about sort of designing optimally. I mean, if you imagine like a McDonald's operation and sort of those jobs, they're so efficient and so proficient at bringing in individuals who entry level can come in. They're taught the standard operating procedures. The layout of the McDonald's facility is very efficient. There's sort of no wasted movement, and it's sort of production line. But really, I mean, just imagine it. You can pull up to the drive-thru and submit your order, and you can decide to make it as complicated as you want. They'll tell you, please drive forward. And within about a minute and a half, you've paid, you have your meal, it's hot, and you're on your way. That's pretty impressive. And they've really honed their craft in making sure that the facility is designed and operates as efficiently as possible. And we need to think about it the same way in our industry.
Yeah, it's a really good illustration. And I like that word hone too, because it kind of reminds me that it's not a one and done process. This is something that can be refined over time. Certainly an expansion is a good opportunity, but even on a daily basis, you know, it's something that any employee can keep an eye out for friction and point that out to the team.
And you're right. I don't know if you lobbed that to me, but that's why it's called continuous improvement, because it's continuously improving. You're evaluating it and constantly adjusting it and making it better. So
yeah. Well, sort of baked into some of that was, like I said, some security considerations. I think this is, you know, some of these ideas are present in other industries, of course, but they're very heightened in cannabis. And I wanted to just bring up locksmiths as a starting point, maybe. And you can certainly take the security question in any direction you'd like, but locksmiths, which, you know, I guess any homeowner may be familiar with the local locksmith in town, they seem pretty important in a facility with a lot of doors. Could you maybe talk about the sometimes overlooked importance of something as basic as locks?
So, yeah, as a lock or as a door. So you have a door. So everyone knows most people know that cannabis plants are light sensitive. If you give the cannabis plant, you know, 12 hours of light and 12 hours of darkness, it'll flower. If you interrupt that cycle with additional light, you can stress the plant out, and the plant might, you know, it depending on the level of stress, it could even potentially hermaphrodite. It can cause seeding. It can do a lot of damage to the plant. So you really need to rely on a robust system for keeping the light separate from your grow rooms, you know, on your terms. And that's where a good locksmith comes in, a good door person comes in. You need to have doors, for example, that self-close. The doors need to have sweeps under them so that you don't get what they call light pollution. If you have a hallway outside of a grow room and you have emergency lighting on 24 hours a day in that hallway, that light could potentially seep through underneath the doorway into that first row of plants and potentially have an adverse impact on their growth, stress them out, force them to seed, maybe pollen, and you risk losing your crop. So a door person, a locksmith, can work with you to install sweeps, automatic sweeps, because you also want to keep those grow rooms positive pressure to the hallway. You don't want whatever's in the hallway getting blown into the grow rooms. You actually want it the other way around. You want the grow rooms as clean as possible, blowing air out, keeping positive pressure to the hallways, which is a little tricky when you have door sweeps, but enter a locksmith. Locksmith can also help with access control. You know, does in our facility, not everyone gets access into every single space within our operation. And it's better that way because, you know, just maintaining that access control, and it's actually a regulation in most states too. You'll see signs posted, limited access area, you know, qualified personnel only. So actually your duty as maintaining your license, as a canna operator to keep those areas limited to approved personnel only.
Certainly. Yeah. Definitely a lot of considerations that, again, you don't want to leave until too far down, your to-do list. These are all pretty top of mind considerations when thinking about facility design. But I wanted to, I guess, zoom back into the present more or less here in 2022. You know, it's hard to turn on the TV or social media anymore without hearing about supply chain problems or even going to the grocery store or anything. Of course, that's having all sorts of impacts on businesses of all stripes. But I wanted to maybe take a moment here at the outset of this year and in this series, of course, to talk about supply chain considerations. And that could be as simple as just delays, which are maybe the most common manifestations. But what are some things that you at CT Pharma, you and your team have been noticing that are either problematic with supply chain, with purchases, or that are surprising as these things keep going?
So that's a great question, Eric. If I could hop in a time machine and go back to me right before our construction began in 2020, what would be the things that I would tell, you know, Reno of 2020? And I think that I would tell him, actually, I know what I would tell him. I would tell him, make sure that you order the long lead time equipment, specifically HVAC equipment. The HVAC equipment, you know, back then in 2020, there were no supply chain issues, but, you know, I think it was like they're usually built to order. They're custom built. Even with the simplest form of HVAC is a commercial grade package DX unit. That's probably the unit you have at your home right now. You have the condenser with the fan on it, and you have the unit inside. And, you know, even the simplest one from a manufacturer like Carrier or Trane, you're going to have to order it, and they're going to have to assemble it in some way, shape, or form. If you go with some of the more sophisticated versions, like a water source heat pump or air-cooled splits or you know, any of the higher order ones, you're going to have even greater lead times. So if, you know, get a quote, how long is it going to take? It's going to take 4 months. If that's what the carrier representative says, give yourself 6 months, you know, to anticipate that equipment. Another big long lead time supply chain is your electrical. you need a tremendous amount of electricity in the cultivation facility. Electricity runs the lights. Electricity also runs the HVAC to cool the lights. It's very, a lot of amperage is required. Absolutely, 100%. One will need to upgrade the capacity of the electrical service to any building that they're that one's contemplating to create a growing operation. I can tell you that, you know, thousands and thousands of amperes of electricity will be required to maintain even the smallest operation. And the electrical company will need to order a special system to support that increased electricity. It's not like they just flip a switch and now you're getting 3,800 amps of service a day. You know, they have to come in and they have to upgrade the transformer. They probably, in order to install the transformer, they're going to need to schedule a time to take down the service in the area, in the surrounding area. They're going to interrupt your neighbor's electrical supply for a couple of hours, because that's the only way they can do it. They actually have to turn off that section of the grid so that they can plug your stuff in and then bring you online. That's going to take, took 6 months last year, pre-pandemic, or the year before. I'm going to say it's probably worse than that, probably 8 or 9 months now. What happened to us was a real bummer. We were supposed to get our transformer in August, and then there was a tropical storm here in Connecticut, and a bunch of trees were knocked out power to, I don't know, probably 40% of the state. So the electrical company said to us, hey, we're not coming with your transformer the first week of August. Where, you know, it's needed somewhere else. People don't have power. We have to give it to them. You know, we understood people need power, but it killed us. We didn't get the transformer delivered until middle of October,
wow,
the first week of August. And we had plants scheduled, you know, to go into rooms, and it was definitely a struggle. So definitely you can't get involved with the electrical company soon enough. You have to let them know. And also natural gas, a lot of times you can convert natural gas to HVAC, et cetera. If you're going to be using natural gas, sooner than later, notifying those professionals to tie them in. Another thing I would do, you'd be shocked, the phone company, the phone and internet service. You know, we bought this commercial building. We figured there'd be commercial supply right outside of the fence line. We reached out to our local cable provider. And they said, yeah, it's going to be a few months till we can get there. You know, we need to do this upgrade, et cetera. And we were surprised, but, you know, that cable supports Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi supports various other components, cellular, et cetera. Cellular is required by your security system, by your building management system, all of the reporting, if, you know, from the grow rooms, your ability to incoming your telephone service, all of that. I would have called Comcast, our local Comcast representative, in February, had I known what I know today, instead of calling them in June and getting our phones turned on in August. So definitely do that.
Yeah, it's, I've been sort of adding supply chain related questions to so many interviews lately, just for a variety of stories. And on one hand, there's a lot of similarities, a lot of common threads, of course. On the other hand, everyone's got a unique angle on the problems that are emerging. So definitely a door worth opening anytime I have a conversation with folks in the industry. Well, Reno, it was certainly fantastic getting the chance to talk to you a little in depth on some of these issues. I know we've had variations of this conversation at past cannabis conferences, and there's always, you know, there are always new angles to get into. But it's great getting a chance to just catch up on everything that CT Pharma is doing and talk about it at a little bit of a high level here. So really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, Eric. Anytime. I'm grateful to be here, grateful for the relationship, and look forward to talking with you again very soon.
And that's a wrap on episode 1 of Growing Indoors. We're very excited to get this podcast series off the ground. There's a lot of territory to explore over these next 9 episodes, and can't wait to dig into some fantastic conversations. Hope you enjoyed that one with Reno Ferraris from Verano, talking about his experiences out in Connecticut. You know, it's sort of a long odyssey anytime you get involved in this industry, state the obvious. And it's interesting to hear just you know, the evolution of that facility in Rocky Hill. We're going to be digging into a lot more specific topics, from environmental controls to vertical growing and much more over these next 9 weeks. Like I said, if there's a certain topic on the indoor cultivation side of things that you'd like to hear about, get in touch via social media on any of Cannabis Business Time's social accounts, Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever. Again, on the way out here, really want to give one more shout out to Foes for sponsoring this series. You'll be hearing more from them throughout these 10 episodes, and we are very thankful for them lending their support and making this series possible. We're excited to bring this one to you. It'll be coming out every Thursday. Starting this week, 9 more weeks, growing indoors. We'll see you next week.